Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the fifth canto, chapter 24, verses 4 through 8. Because verse 4 has a very one sentence purport, so we'll just continue till we come to a little longer purport. So there's no board, so I'll just read.
Tato dastatsira charana vidya dharanam sadani taban matra eva.
Below Rahu by 10,000 yojanas, which is 80,000 miles, are the planets known as Siddhaloka, Charanaloka, and Vidyadhara Loka. Purport. It is said that the residents of Siddhaloka, being naturally endowed with the powers of yogis, can go from one planet to another by their natural mystic powers without using airplanes or similar machines. Text number 5.
Tato dastat yaksha raksha pisacha preta bhuta gananam vihara jaram antariksham yarvad vayu pravati yavan mega upalbante.
Beneath Vidyalora, Vidyadhara Loka, Charna Loka, and Siddha Loka, in the sky called Antariksha, are the places of enjoyment for the Yakshas, Rakshasas, Pisachas, ghosts, and so on. Antariksha extends as far as the wind blows and the clouds float in the sky. Above this, there is no more air. Text number 6.
Tato dastachada yojantara iyam prithivi yavadam sabasasena suparnadya patatri pavadra utpatantiti.
Below the abodes of the Yakshas and Rakshasas, by a distance of 100 yojanas, 800 miles, is the planet Earth. Its upper limits extend as high as swans, hawks, eagles, and similar large birds can fly. So we're taking a tour of the universe, and we landed on Earth now. Now we're going to go below the Earth. So this is text number 7.
Upavarnitam bhumir yatasani vesavastanam avanirapiyadastatsapta bhuvivada ikaikaso yojana yutana terena yama vistareno palpa atalam vitalam sutalam talatalam Mahatalam, Rasatalam, Patalam Miti.
My dear king, beneath this earth are the seven other planets known as Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Mahatala, Rasatala, and Patala. I have already explained the situation of the planetary systems of earth. The width and length of the seven lower planetary systems are calculated to be exactly the same as those of Earth. Text number 8.
Ite suhi bila svargeshu svargadapi arika kama bhogaishvaryanada bhutivi bhutivi susamridha bhavano dhyana krida. Vihareshu daitadanava kadraveya nitya pramuditanu rakta kalatrapatya bandhu suridanuchara grihapatya ishvararappi apratihattakama maya vinoda nivasanti.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. In these seven planetary systems, which are also known as the subterranean heavens, Bila Swarga, there are many beautiful houses, gardens, and places of sense enjoyment, which are even more opulent than those in the higher planets, because the demons have a very high standard of sensual pleasure, wealth, and influence. Most of the residents of these planets, who are known as Daityas, Danavas, and Nagas, live as householders. Their wives, children, friends, and society are fully engaged in illusory material happiness. The sense enjoyment of the demigods is sometimes disturbed. But the residents of these planets enjoy life without disturbances. Thus, they are understood to be very attached to illusory happiness. Purport. According to the statements of Prahlad Maharaj, material enjoyment is maya sukha, illusory enjoyment. A Vaishnava is full of anxieties for the deliverance of all living entities from such false enjoyment. Prahlad Maharaj says, maya sukhaya param udvahato vimudhan. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.43. These fools, mudhas, are engaged in material happiness, which is surely temporary. Whether in the heavenly planets, the lower planets, or the earthly planets, people are engrossed in temporary material happiness, forgetting that in due course of time, they have no change, or they have to change their bodies according to the material laws and suffer the repetition of birth, death, old age, and disease. Not caring for what will happen in the next birth, gross materialists are simply busy enjoying during the present short span of life. A Vaishnava is always anxious to give all such bewildered materialists the real happiness of spiritual bliss. Om Ajnana Tamarandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksus Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upagadamayam Dadanti Swabhadantikam Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Vanchakopa Tubhyascha, Kripa Sindhubhyascha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So these are the subterranean heavenly planets that are being described now. And they're also known as the Bila Swarga, or artificial heavens. And it's described that there's seven different planetary systems. So sometimes this culture is described as a culture of distractions. We live in a culture of distractions. There's so many choices. There's so many different types of sense gratificatory entertainment and so many different things. But nay, a culture of distractions, there's a universe of distractions. And here we're going through a tour here. We're actually becoming observers through the Vedic literatures and observing the upper planetary systems, which we just finished in previous chapters also, it's described, the earthly planetary system. And now we're going to take a tour of the lower planetary systems. And it's so beautiful that it can attract anyone and make their mind fully blossom in the pleasure of sense gratification. So talk about distractions. This is even more, it seems like, attractive than the heavenly planets, because as described in this verse, sometimes there's disturbances, but here there is no disturbances. In fact, it's described there that there is no sunshine. Time's not divided into days and nights. And consequently, the fear of time doesn't exist. And the residents there, they drink and they bathe in this juices and elixirs. They're from wonderful herbs there. And it frees them from all anxieties of physical diseases. And they don't even experience gray hair, wrinkles, invalidity, and their bodily luster never fades. Even their perspiration, it doesn't have a bad smell. They're not troubled by fatigue, lack of energy, or enthusiasm due to old age. Pretty attractive place, huh? They live auspiciously there, it's described, and they don't fear death from anything but the established time factor, which comes as the effulgence of the Sudarshan chakra of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when the Sudarshan chakra enters their provinces, the pregnant wives, they actually have miscarriages because they're fearful of this effulgence. So there's seven planets described there. So let's take a little tour, since it's the beginning of this particular section where it's describing the lower planetary systems. And there's seven of them described. And the first one is Atala. And that's where the son of Maya Danava, named Bala, lives. And he's a great mystic. He created 96 kinds of mystic power. One of them is simply by yawning, he created three types of women. And if a man enters this Atala planet, these women capture him and they induce him to drink this intoxicating beverage. And it endows him with sexual prowess and such great strength that the women then exploit him for their full satisfaction. But the man, illusioned and intoxicated by this false pride, he thinks himself stronger than 10,000 elephants. And then he considers himself most perfect. He even thinks himself God, ignoring impending death. So this is one level of distraction here. And then we go to the second planet below us. It's Vitala. This is where Lord Shiva resides. And Lord Shiva, he's the master of gold mines. He lives with his associates. There are ghosts and different living entities like that. But as the progenitor, Lord Shiva engaged in sex with his wife, Bhavani, and he produces living entities. And from the mixture of their vital fluid, a river called Hataki is generated. And when the fire made from this mixture, or when fire, which comes as the form of wind, it's produced from the wind, this fire drinks this liquid, and then when it sizzles and spits it out, it turns into gold. And the entities there make so many ornaments out of gold and like that, and they think themselves very happy. So let's go to the Sutala planet. This is where Bali Maharaj resides. He is considered the most pious king, and he resides there even now. The Lord was pleased with Bali Maharaj for giving him all his possessions, which the Lord took of the three worlds. But the Lord being pleased, he returned his kingdom and made him richer and more opulent than Indra. But there, Bali Maharaj engages in devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And even there, Krishna, in the form of Vamanadev, stands at his door with a club in his hand to protect him. And one time, Ravana, coming there to conquer and take victory of that place, Vamana kicked him with his big toe, and he landed 80,000 miles away. So then we go to Tala. This is where a sorcerer, a great sorcerer, resides. He's a Danava demon named Maya. And once Lord Shiva, he set fire to his three kingdoms, but later, being pleased with this demon, he returned his kingdom, and he's protected by Lord Shiva. So this Danava, he falsely thinks himself, you know, that he doesn't have to fear the Sudarshan Chakra. So he's in illusion there. And then the fifth planetary system down is the Mahatala. It's the abode of these many-hooded snakes. They're the descendants of Kadru, who they're always angry. And it described the prominent snakes there are like Kuhaka, Takshaka, Kaliya, and Susena. And they're always disturbed by the fear of Garuda. And then the next planet down is Rasatala. And there the demoniac sons of Diti and Danu reside. They're enemies of the demigods, and they live in these holes like snakes. They're extremely powerful and cruel, and although they're proud of their strength, they're still defeated by the Sudarshan Chakra. And Indra sends a female messenger there. Her name is Sarama, and she comes and chants a particular curse. And then all these serpentine demons, they become very afraid of Indra. And then the lowest planet, there's Patala, or sometimes called Naga Loka. There's many demoniac serpents there, and the chief is Vasuki. They're also very extremely angry, and they have many hoods. Some of them have 5, some 7, some have 100 hoods, and even some have 1,000 hoods. And these hoods are all bedecked with these very valuable jewels. And the light from them is what illuminates the entire planetary system of this Bilaswarga. So all the 7 planetary systems are illumined by these hooded snakes with the gems on their hoods. So this is a description of the lower planetary systems, and you could kind of get a glimpse of their attitude, of how they think they're most satisfied, and they get so attached to their wonderful places of residence. But they forget the time factor. Krishna comes as a form of the Sudarshan Chakra and completely wipes them out. Now, in contrast to that, we remember reading about the upper planetary systems and the demigods. Even they're more pious, and they realize that, yes, due to some pious activity, we've attained this particular place. But they realize that the human form and the planet Earth is even much more elevated than the heavenly planets, because simply by being here on this heavenly, in this earthly planet, they can make advancement. And that was back in the 19th chapter. There's verse 21. Since the human form of life is the sublime position for spiritualization, all the demigods in heaven speak in this way. How wonderful it is for these human beings to have been born in the land of Bhartavarsha. They must have executed pious acts of austerity in the past, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself must have been pleased with them. Otherwise, how could they engage in devotional service in so many ways? We demigods can only aspire to achieve human births in Bhartavarsha, to execute devotional service. But these human beings are already engaged there. They continue, after performing the very difficult tasks of executing Vedic ritualistic sacrifices, undergoing austerities, observing vows, and giving charity, we have achieved this position as inhabitants of the heavenly planets. But what is the value of this achievement? Here we are certainly very engaged in material sense gratification. So there's the distractions of the higher planetary systems. And therefore, we can hardly remember the lotus feet of Lord Narayan. Indeed, because of our excessive sense gratification, we have almost forgotten his lotus feet. The land of Bhartavarsha is so exalted that by taking birth there, one can not only attain the heavenly planets, but also go directly home, back to Godhead. So, Prabhupada writes in the purport that instead of becoming captivated by a higher standard of sense gratification and therefore forget the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord at the time of death, the conclusion is that one who has taken birth in the land of Bhartavarsha must follow the instructions given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one should try to return home, back to Godhead, to the Vaikuntha planets. And there, live eternally full of blissful knowledge and in the company of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the demigods also, one more verse, they glorify this planet. A short life in the land of Bhartavarsha is preferable to a life achieved in Brahmaloka for millions and billions of years. Because even if one is elevated to Brahmaloka, he must return to repeated birth and death. Although life in Bhartavarsha in a lower planetary system is very short, one who lives there can elevate himself to full Krishna consciousness and achieve the highest perfection, even in this short life, by fully surrendering unto the lotus feet of the Lord. Thus one attains Vaikuntha Loka, where there is no anxiety, no repeated birth in the material body. So Prabhupada writes in the purport here that one who has taken birth in the land of Bhartavarsha has a full opportunity to study the direct instructions given by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita and thus finally decide what to do in his human form of life. One should certainly give up all other propositions and surrender to Krishna. Krishna will then immediately take charge and relieve one of the results of past sinful life. Therefore, one should take to Krishna consciousness, as Krishna himself recommends, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me and offer me obeisances. This is very easy, even for a child. Why not take this path? One should try to follow the instructions of Krishna exactly and thus become fully eligible to be promoted to the kingdom of God. One should go directly to Krishna and engage in his service. This is the best opportunity offered to the inhabitants of Bhartavarsha. One who is fit to return home back to Godhead is no longer liable to the results of karma, good or bad. So as mentioned in this purport, Prahlad Maharaj was thinking of the welfare of all living entities, how they're so distracted and engaged in sense gratification. And going further back into previous chapters, there were some prayers offered by different residents of different planets. And there's a resident of Prahlad Maharaj. And he's saying, may there be good fortune throughout the universe, and may all envious persons be pacified. May all living entities become calm by practicing bhakti yoga. And by accepting devotion or service, they will think of each other's welfare. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Sri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in thought of Him. And Prabhupada writes in this purport that if the Krishna conscious movement spreads all over the world, and if by the grace of Krishna everyone accepts it, the thinking of envious people will change. Everyone will think of the welfare of others. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj prays, Sivamito Diya. In material activities, everyone is envious of others. But in Krishna consciousness, no one is envious of anyone else. Everyone thinks of the welfare of others. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj prays that everyone's mind may become gentle by being fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna. Bhajata Dharoksa Jay. As indicated elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindayo. And as advised by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakta. One should constantly think of the lotus feet of the Lord, Krishna. Then one's mind will certainly be cleansed. Jeto Darpana Marjanam. Materialists always think of sense gratification, but Prahlad Maharaj prays that the Lord's mercy will change their minds and they will stop thinking of sense gratification. If they think of Krishna always, everything will be all right. All right, then. So, just see how fortunate we are to be in this particular planet. Actually, this planet sometimes is called Bhartavarsha or it's Mother Earth. We know how loving a mother is. She's so considerate and so loving towards and always well-wishing for her children. And also another, we have seven mothers. One of our mothers is the Vedas. And as mentioned, Prabhupada said, if we take shelter of the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, these books, then we'll get direction and we'll know exactly our proper situation. When we're lost and we're bewildered in so many different ways, we just take shelter of our mother. This planet is very good shelter. There's so much resources given to us that the demigods even envious of it. And they wish to take birth here in this mother. So we're here already. And we have so many mothers, so many blessings. And if you allow me, I'd like to just do something a little different here. This is what inspired me about this mother's blessings. I just happened to stumble along this song. And as you listen to this, the first part's in Spanish, which some of you understand, and then the next part is in English. And it's a very nice song, and it just gives you the mood of a mother. And just think of this, as you're listening to this, as, you know, how blessed we are by our mothers. And I think this song just depicts it. I'm just going to play just 2 minutes of the song, and you can hear it, and just get that mood of a mother, and just think how we have the shelter of this mother who's always thinking of our welfare and giving us, you know, the blessings. You know, so just listen like this, and I'll play it right now. Give you an idea. So just see the blessings, the mood of a mother. Just reminded me of my mother when we had a family reunion. I remember my aunt went up to my mother, and my mother was sitting, you know, had they rent a hall, and my mom was sitting on a chair, and it was all decorated. She was sitting there, and my aunt went up to her and she said, "Oh, Isabel," that's my mom's name, "can you bless me?" And my mom blessed her and said, I said, "Well, that's a good idea. I think I'm going to go up to my mom." So I kneeled before my mom and I said, "Can you give me blessings?" She says, "Sure." She says, "May you never forget God. Or may God always be with you," like that. So this is the blessings we get from our mothers, and then from the Vedas, actually. By reading the scriptures constantly, we never forget God. You see, not even for a moment. And He's the Lord of the universe. So He's controlling everything. And what better shelter can we take than that? So just see, people that are bewildered, people that are lost, they come in shelter of a devotee who has this resource, who has this blessings that they've received, and then they give that blessing. And I could think of two examples. Just recently, there's a devotee. This person met this devotee on the beach in Hawaii. And Actually, it was Narhari. He met a devotee. He met this person. And somehow or another, they stroke up a conversation. And she was a person that was actually searching, that was lost, kind of looking for a guru or something. And they talked about philosophy, Bhagavad Gita, and he gave her a Bhagavad Gita. And she brought it back. She actually lives here in Los Angeles area. And after maybe about a month or so, then she decided to read it, and she read the Gita. And after reading the Gita, she gradually became a vegetarian. At first she thought, as she was reading the Gita, oh, I'll probably still have a steak. But then as she went like halfway through, she says, well, maybe just like eggs and fish. But then by the time she finished the entire Bhagavad Gita, she was a complete vegetarian. And then she's read Krishna book. She's starting to read Srimad Bhagavatam. She comes to the temple and takes prasadam. And she's starting to create a temple in her home. So she took shelter of the Bhagavad Gita. And this is what happens. And then another story just recently actually happened yesterday. There was this guy, he came to visit the temple for the first time. He's actually Indian, but he's actually a Buddhist from birth. His parents are Buddhists. And he's been going through some trouble and, you know, just so many things. His health was going really bad and, you know, he lost his relationship with his girlfriend and he's about to lose his job in about a year. So he wanted to take shelter of a devotee. So he had in his mind that as soon as I'm going to visit this temple and the first devotee I see, I'm going to invite him to come and bless my home. So it just so happened, you know, he was driving across the street and I happened to be walking across the street with some prasadam taken home from the Maharoom. And then he was watching me and he parked his car and he came and followed me and knocked on my door. And he very humbly came and practically bowed down and said, you know, I'm having very difficulty. My life is really terrible. And I was wondering if you could come and bless my home because I feel very much disturbed there. I started looking at him and I was kind of like taken aback. I was like, dude, for real? It's like, you know, is this kind of like a setup or something? But, you know, I could tell he was sincere. So I said, oh, when did you want in? And I said, I wasn't doing anything at that time. I just finished actually eating. And I said, well, we could go now if you like. So we came and went to his house and we blessed, you know, came to his home and I sat there and, you know, he offered me some fruit and stuff. And it was really weird because, you know, he had me sit on a chair and then he was sitting on the floor. And then I chanted around and he chanted with me. And so I brought the Bhagavad Gita as a gift for his home and a higher taste. And after we finished the round, I said, okay, well, let's get the Bhagavad Gita and let's read some from there. But I said, first, just grab the Bhagavad Gita and just open it anywhere. Just meditate. And so he respectfully grabbed the Bhagavad Gita and he opened it. And he just meditated and then he opened this to a particular, anywhere in the Gita. And he opens the Gita and he was like shocked, you know, because he said, that's my name. My name is in that verse. And he got a verse from the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which talks about Prashantatma, how the yogi, you know, should sit straight and, you know, should be peaceful and should come back. And that verse, his name is Prashant. And he was shocked. And then we read the verse together, we read the purport together, and he had some real amazing realizations because he was realizing how in the Buddhists they meditate. And he was realizing how he actually, you know, was like shaken by this, what's happening to him, that he was forgetting his own type of meditation. But in the purport, Prabhupada is talking about what is real meditation, is to actually meditate on Krishna. So he's realized, yeah, this is what I need to do. I need to get back and meditate and think of Krishna, you know. So it was really nice. So then we talked and came back I told him, you know, we have a nice Sunday program going on now. If you want to come and you can see the temple and the deities. And so I brought him to the temple and he met different devotees, Shastrakrit and Omkar. And, you know, and then he saw the deities, came, we took prasadam. And the thing is, anything that he would eat before he came here would cause his skin to break out and all these rashes. But he said when I came to the temple, he had eaten at Govinda's earlier, no rash, nothing happened. So it was very nice how, you know, as the devotees, I mean, if everyone took shelter of Krishna and they knew that their great fortune was here, just like your mother, a mother's blessing. Everyone would take shelter and be blessed and satisfied and happy and get direction, just as these two examples of people that are searching. And there's many people like that that we're meeting. There's so many Sankirtan devotees telling so many stories how they meet people like that. So in the same way, we have to become, you know, real surrendered devotees, take up this mercy, you know, the envy of the demigods, and we have this shelter of Mother Earth, shelter of the Mother Vedas, which reminds us of our father, you know, and the blessings that we receive from them, to not forget him for a moment, getting distracted by sense gratification in this universe of distractions. So when we do that, then people will be attracted and they'll just want to take shelter and become, as Prabhupada says, everything will be all right. Jai. So is there any comments or questions, realizations? Yes, I think Prabhu.
How does one end up in the lower planetary systems? Like, what sort of karma must one perform?
It's all by desire and your karma and activities. You know, we're acting, we really want to enjoy like demons. You know, do your pious activities, you may actually go to these subterranean heavenly planets, these imitation heavens, and you could enjoy it there for a long time. But it's temporary. It's you're distracted from your real purpose. But yeah, it's basically, it's very simple. Just by your desires and your activities. Just how simply you can go back to the spiritual world, to the planets beyond this material planetary system, simply by thinking of Krishna. Simply by your desire. So it's very easy, actually. Yes, Prabhu.
Yeah, just to kind of amplify his question.
Sure.
Are you saying that to go to the subterranean heavenly planets, one must perform pious activity or impious activity?
Well, it's, you know, these activities are very complicated. I'm sure if you were completely impious, you'd probably go to the hellish planets where you suffer. But it seems somehow or another these living entities have some kind of piety, because it says that they engage in auspicious activities. But these activities are basically based around their family and society and everything. So I'm not, it's very complicated. Maybe someone else has something they could say about that. But I mean, yeah, there's probably some pious and impiety there, because there's 8,400,000 species, and there's so many different desires, and Krishna fulfills all of them. So yeah, it's probably pretty complicated. Yes, Archita. Yeah.
I mean, the activities that are described there basically go on here on Earth.
Sure.
There are people who like to intoxicate themselves for extra, you know, sense gratification, prowess. So if you really meditate on that and that's what you want to do, Krishna will arrange.
Sure.
And you will act in the right way to get that desire fulfilled.
Yeah.
Krishna is the one who's upadrashta anumantascha. He's overseeing and permitting. So if you develop desire to live in that style, Krishna will arrange it that you're going to act in the right way to get there. Whether it's pious and pious, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what the mixture is. But Krishna will direct you to the right mixture, so you'll wind up in that place and enjoy in that way for some time. Until Sudarshan Chakra comes and, you know, rearranges the landscape.
The universe of distractions. Can you imagine? Due to our so many different types of desires, there has to be a universe to fulfill them all. Upper planetary, lower planetaries. It's amazing. Any other comments, questions? Thank you for your kind attention. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam.